Today we're going to continue on our Pride Month series that we've been doing. Today, this is part three of it. Today is the first anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, and they were actually led by queer and trans women of color in response to the raid of the police on the Stonewall Inn in New York City. And it was basically, that was the beginning of the modern LGBTQ civil rights movement. The next year, the next year was the first celebration of Pride Month, which makes this year the 50th anniversary of Pride Month. And in honor of it, we're doing a three-part series on what are known as the clobber verses in the Bible. This is a list of six, maybe seven. Yeah, six or seven out of the entire Bible that are used to hurt LGBTQ folk, hence the clobber verses, and hence the title of my message, Clobbering Biblical Gay Bashing. Biblical in quotes. We still have three verses to go. These are all in the New Testament, and we're going to cover them today and sort of wrap up this series. And I have to warn you, and I do apologize for this, but today we are going to have to talk about some Greek words. But I promise I'll try to make it as painless as possible. It's a little painful for me, too, so I understand. Now, up until today, the verses that we've looked at have only addressed male-male sexual intimacy. But our first verse today is Romans 1, 26 through 28. So good news, ladies. In Romans, you get to join in. Lucky you. Romans is one of the places. It's one of the places in the Bible that specifically speaks. It's actually the one place that specifically speaks to about a female sex act. You know, if you listen to LGBT folk, anti-LGBT folks specifically, anti-LGBT folks, you would be surprised to learn that while the counts vary on how many places the Bible actually directly addresses heterosexual relationships, well, it's a lot. It's a whole lot. Then again, compared to the precisely one place in the Bible that it talks about sex between two women, even two texts about heterosexual relationships would be 100% more. Now, the number of heterosexually oriented verses, like I said, isn't exactly clear. But one thing is really clear. There's plenty of them, much like the Levitical purity code, which we talked about last week. We've managed to ignore many of them. So, if you aren't also denouncing the divorced, then get off your lesbian judging high horse, because otherwise you're just picking and choosing who to judge out of your own accord and then quoting the one Bible verse that seems to support your choice. And even then, as we will see, it doesn't actually support your argument. Ironically, it actually does the exact opposite, as we will see. You know, in Romans, we have the most extensive discussion of same-sex intercourse in the Bible. A whole two seemingly specific verses. Just astounding. There are plenty of approaches to understanding what Paul is trying to teach us in these texts. Any good exegesis ultimately points to the reality that what Paul is talking about and what people who use these verses as clobber verses want Paul to be talking about, well, they're just not the same thing. That is, this is not about homosexual people having consenting homosexual relationships. One convincing argument about these texts looks at the fact that one of the most prevalent forms of same-sex sex in Greco-Roman world was what was male prostitution, which frequently involved boys. And in that analysis, the text becomes a condemnation of pederasty and prostitution, but things that most Christians, from conservative to liberal, disapprove of to one degree or another. There's also the perspective that that Paul is pointing to same-sex intercourse as being idolatrous, and that could be referring to the practices of priests and priestesses of Mediterranean fertility gods who regularly practice that type of prostitution and elevated it with a religious context to the state of basically idolatry. And those approaches are valid, and they're mostly convincing perspectives. But for me, they all do require a small leap of logic to arrive at their conclusion. Much, much less of a leap of logic, mind you, than believing that these texts were about something the people at which the time had absolutely no comprehension, but slightly conjecture, but slight conjecture at the same time. Yep. The analysis that I find the most convincing concerns itself with the word natural. It's the word that's led many people to speak of LGBTQ behavior as unnatural. Unnatural acts, even though they occur throughout, and I mean throughout nature. In one study, they found that there were more than 1,500 species in which it could be found. As it turns out, though, the word is not actually natural. Our English translations tend to think it is. Now, hopefully this is not a surprise to anyone that it turns out Paul did not speak English. See, while the Bible tells tales of Paul performing a number of miraculous things, speaking English, which wasn't even around yet, was definitely not one of them. Now, not to bore you too much, but the word that Paul used was the Greek word physikos. We did Greek, and it didn't hurt too much now, did it? Okay, good. It's important to know the word in Greek because when it's translated into English, it loses a little bit of its original meaning. And, you know, without even knowing it, Lady Gaga has actually provided a much better modern and contextual translation of physikos than what we use in most translation, normal. We'll get back to that in a minute. You see, it doesn't mean natural or nature so much as it means produced by nature. Those who use these verses as clobber verses, they tend to understand natural to mean something closer to normal, much more than produced by nature. And not surprisingly, they also then define what is and isn't normal based on their personal biases rather than on science or the reality of the world around them. Something as in, I feel uncomfortable when I'm around gay people, so I henceforth do hereby dub it as an act of not natural. You know, in reality, physikos, the Greek word physikos, has more to do with how things naturally occur in creation. Now, at this point, you may have begun to guess that physikos is actually related to the same root word which we get the word physics, which is, of course, the study of the realities of nature. Conveniently, the way that Paul uses physikos here in Romans also, well, it also means something very similar to the realities of nature. It is it's concerned with what our nature and not what it is and not with what is defined as acceptable. That is to say that Paul is concerned with how God created something or someone to be. He's concerned with people going against their nature, or in the words of Lady Gaga herself, if they were born that way. He's concerned with them behaving as if they were not. That's the sin here in Romans, acting against the very nature of who God created you to be. And in this case, he seems to be addressing the idea of a same-sex act in which at least one of the two just aren't attracted to someone of the same sex. They're not born that way. Understood this way. It would be equally sinful for someone who is only attracted to someone of the same sex to have sex with someone of the opposite sex. And now I'm beginning to realize that I may be breaking the record for the number of times an ordained minister says sex in a sermon. So just to get the numbers a little bit higher, let me repeat that last line. Like I said, understood this way, it would be equally sinful for someone who is only attracted to someone of the same sex to have sex with someone of the opposite sex. It just goes against their nature. They weren't born that way. And ironically, telling those LGBTQ folks that these verses mean that they have to somehow stop being LGBTQ folk, well, they're actually telling them to commit the very sin against which these verses warn, going against their nature. So God, it would seem, has a wicked sense of humor. Because these texts have been used so much to address homosexuality, it was important to address the issue directly. But the worst thing we could do is to think that it is primarily about homosexuality. It is not. See, immediately following the end of this, in verse 28, Paul provides an extensive list of sins. And it's so extensive that almost all of us fall into at least one of the categories. And basically, Paul is saying, so there you have it. We all sin. Don't try to deny it. And let's face it. We all go against who we know we were created to be from time to time. How many times have you done something, felt guilty or felt shame, and then ultimately said, I shouldn't have done that. That's not who I am. And as Paul then says in the very next chapter, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And he also starts that chapter by saying, therefore, pay attention, this is important. Therefore, you have no excuse, whoever you are, when you judge others, for in passing judgment on another, you condemn yourself because you, the judge, are doing the very same things. Okay, let's move on to our final two verses. And I'm going to lump these two together because they use the same Greek word. I apologize. We're going to have to go Greek again. It's 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10, and 1 Timothy 1, 9 through 10. But, you know, remember back a few minutes ago when we talked about that Greek word? And remember how it didn't even hurt one little bit? Okay, we're going to do it again. Like I said, I put 1 Corinthians and 1 Timothy caudal verses together because they both use a particular Greek word in a particularly similar way. The word is arsenikotis. Arsenikotis, and it means male prostitute. Behold the Greek interpretation. See how good it is and rejoice. Actually, it could mean a customer of a male prostitute or a boy molester or someone who abuses themselves with a man or it could mean sexual manipulation for money. Well, they all the great powerful Greek interpretation. So the word in these two verses that's frequently interpreted as homosexuality, which is absurd because in Greek it's clearly a word which only refers to men, or as sodomite, which is absurd among other reasons because, well, that wasn't the sin of sodomy as we discussed last Sunday. The word in these two verses is, well, it's just really difficult to translate. Why? But well, why isn't it difficult to interpret? In part, because it's only found in these two places. And also, in part, because it's entirely possible that it's a made-up word. It is very likely that Greek-speaking Jews created this word to sort of port a Hebrew word into Greek, and over time, its meaning's basically been lost. So, it's just hard to translate. So difficult, in fact, that scholars can't even agree on a single best interpretation. What most biblical Greek scholars can agree on about this, though, is that it is not meant to be a blanket statement about a male-male sexual intimacy. So, moving on. There is another word that shows up in 1 Corinthians 6, 9. Greek word, promise it won't hurt, malakos. And the good news about this word is that, this is actually found in lots of literature, unlike our last word. So there are plenty of references about this typical intended meaning. It literally means soft. So some say it means soft as in effeminate, but not in terms of sexual orientation. Others say that it's connected with being wasteful of sexual and financial resources. Still, others conveniently point to it singling out a particular type of male prostitution involving young boys. And also in the list of contenders are sexual perverts, sodomites, weaklings, the self-indulgent. Again, behold the great and powerful Greek interpretation. You know, like with arsenikotis, there just really is no expert consensus on the interpretation of this word either. Malakosis was a word that could be used to refer to things as diverse as men who were weak in battle or who were soft. It could have talked about men who lived in sort of an extravagant, pampered life or who were, well, soft. It was not specifically about sexual relationships. If Paul was actually trying to describe something about a submissive male in a male-to-male relationship, which is not the same as homosexuality as we understand it today, but if he was, it's very likely that he would have used the word kynaidos, which is frequently used to describe that very relationship. But he didn't. He didn't use that word. It was available to him. He didn't use it. So Folks just need to stop acting like you did. In summary of my look at the Christian church's use of the clobber verses, if you want to call homosexuality a sin, go ahead. But you're going to have to admit that it's not biblically a sin, which means you're going to also have to admit that you're calling it a sin simply because it's what you want to do. And because of that, you're going to have to admit that you are a sinner for using God's name for false pretenses. It's a little thing we like to call using God's name in vain. And then Paul has something to tell you in Romans 2:1. You have no excuse, whoever you are. When you judge others, you have no excuse. For in passing judgment on others, you condemn yourself because you, the judge, are doing the very same things.